Council present by Zoom, can you hear us?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, this is case number 20-13761, Mathis versus Esslinger. And counsel, you may begin when you're ready.
Actually, Your Honor, our case is Cindy Thayer.
Yes, I
saw. Oh, okay.
I skipped right over it.
Yes, I apologize.
This is Thayer versus, let me start over again, get that right. It's 21-10744 Thayer versus Randy Marion Chevrolet Buick Cadillac LLC. And we have Mr. Lee for the appellant.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. Good morning to the court from Jacksonville, where I am. And please let me thank the court for allowing us to appear by teleconference for this. This case comes to the court and really deals with the distinct issue of what rents and leases means under the Grays Amendment. The appellant's position is that the complimentary loaner vehicle that Randy Marion provided to the person that they were performing service with their car does not fall within that language of the Grays Amendment. And under the dictionary definition of those words, a rental or a lease must involve an agreed upon payment. And there was no payment like that here. We've cited to the court the Zazerski case for the purpose of the Grays Amendment not being extended to protection in this particular situation. The Zazerski case, as we've put in our brief, we believe is almost on all fours.
I think there's one key difference, which is that Zazerski is based almost entirely on my reading on New York law. What's your response to that?
It is, Your Honor. You highlighted what the trial court, or excuse me, the district court said. And its opinion is that it was based on New York law, and that's why it did not find it persuasive. However, when you look at the Zazerski case and the law that it was based upon, the law itself says that it was, I think it's Vehicle and Traffic Law, Section 388 is what Zazerski talks about. It is very similar in both context and in, frankly, spirit, Your Honor, with the Dangerous Instrumentality Law that is Florida law. And the quote from the state statute expresses the policy that one injured by the negligent operation of a motor vehicle should have recourse to a financially responsible defendant. That's part and parcel of what the Dangerous Instrumentality Law is. And therefore, even though it is New York law that Zazerski is looking at, it is very similar to the Dangerous Instrumentality Law in Florida. But the court now, as the court knows from my supplemental authority, the letter that I sent, now the court now actually has a district court of opinion case from Florida that's dealing specifically with the Dangerous Instrumentality Law, and that is the Romero decision that I've sent to the court, Romero versus Fields Motor Cars. Obviously, in the Romero case, they dealt specifically with Florida's law that, in that case, Fields Motor was saying basically preempted the Dangerous Instrumentality Law, and it dealt with a situation that factually was extremely close to our own situation. And in Romero, what the I believe it was the fifth district court of appeal ultimately held was that the fact that Fields indicated that there may have been some consideration, meaning a purchase price or service charges that were built in, even in Romero, to the cost of this complimentary loaner vehicle does not mean that that is a rent or lease agreement under the Grays Amendment.
But in Romero, the agreement, the loaner agreement specifically said that the agreement created a bailment. And of course, we don't have that here.
That is true, Your Honor. One thing that I'd like to mention in the Romero case, yes, you're correct. It does say that it talks about a bailment. However, the defendant in Romero specifically stated that the charges for the loaner vehicle were built into it, were built into that agreement. That's this loaner agreement that they had with Romero. In this case, we have nothing of the sort. We don't even have that. The agreement, which is dubious at best in this case, but what we have is testimony.
Counsel, does not common sense tell you that common sense and common experience that any overhead cost like this loaner would be built in?
I don't think I would agree with that, Your Honor, because there are many situations where there are free things given to customers. Now, are they built into the overall cost of doing business? Maybe.
Matter of common experience, any good businessman would do that.
And I don't think I would disagree with that, Your Honor, but that's not the question before the court. The question is whether when Congress put together the language of the Graves Amendment and when it said rents or leases, it meant that. And we've cited to a lot of different law, but the bottom line, Your Honor, is that if Congress wanted to make rents or leases or the Graves Amendment apply to other things such as what you're talking about, loaner vehicles, bailments, gratuitous bailments, as it's called in Romero, they could absolutely have done so. And we know that they were thinking at least of the bailment situation because they included in their owner definition bailee. So an owner is classified as a bailee from some other person.
One problem I have is that both you and opposing counsel have cited various dictionaries, right? And some cut one way and some cut the other way. So at that point, I think it becomes a little harder to sort things out based only on dictionary definitions.
I would agree, Judge. I believe that based upon what we think the definitions are, both in Zazersky and Romero, that those lead to the result that we're seeking. However, if we go along this path and we say that there are two reasonable interpretations of what a rent or a lease is, then we get into the second part of statutory construction, which is that when a statute or code or law is ambiguous, then it's got to be strictly construed.
How would one strictly construe this in the face of ambiguity?
Well, maybe strictly construed is the wrong language, Judge. What I'm saying is that when you're dealing with where it's ambiguous, then I believe that the law states that you have to go with something that is less, less obtrusive, meaning that unless the Graves Amendment strictly applies to the dangerous instrumentality to basically get rid of that doctrine, if the Graves Amendment is ambiguous, this court must lay on the side of not getting rid of the dangerous instrumentality law. That's what our argument is in this case. It's sort of a secondary argument, but that's what the argument is if you get beyond where this court is saying that it is an ambiguous term.
Let me ask you this. I would be a little surprised. I know that Florida deems a loaned automobile a dangerous instrumentality. I would be surprised if that is a very widespread law in other states. Do you know that?
You mean the loaner or what?
No, I'm talking about just the concept that an automobile is a dangerous instrumentality. Is that common in all of the states? I would gather the automobiles are such common experiences. Parents routinely let their children drive it, and friends. I would be a little surprised that it would be deemed a dangerous instrumentality. I'm questioning whether the common law really helps you here.
Well, I believe that the dangerousness of mentality law, as I understand it, Your Honor, it comes from the purpose of automobiles themselves being something that could cause harm on the road. And I don't think anyone would quarrel with the fact that
I'm gathering you don't know the answer to my question, and that's all right. I don't know it either.
I do know, Judge, that whereas it may not be called a dangerous instrumentality in those terms, but I do know laws in other states, and New York actually talks about that even though it's not called a dangerous vehicle, it does say that owners of vehicles, even if they give it to their friends, their family, their sons, their daughters, should be liable financially for the consequences of what that person does. And so that really, I believe, underpins what the dangerous instrumentality seeks to do.
Doesn't that cut against you, though, here? Because it doesn't seem that this car was shared, to avoid using a term, a contested term, as a matter of being friends or being family. It was used as a result of the person's other vehicle being serviced.
I understand where the question, Your Honor. What I would say is that the vehicle in this case is, and I think Romero does a good explanation of any with this, is that it's at best a gratuitous bailment. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, you've talked a lot about Romero. Do you have any comments on Collins?
Yes, I do. Collins, there's one, I think, distinguishing factor that distinguishes completely from this case. In Collins, there was never any argument that we could see from the plaintiff that actually argued that the complementary vehicle that was involved in Collins was not part of the Gravesman. So that argument was never brought in front of Collins. It never responded to it. There's nothing in the opinion that says it responded to it. And therefore, that's why it is different from this case, and frankly, from Romero, which actually says that. So I don't believe Collins is the same type of situation, because frankly, Collins didn't deal with the argument that we've made in this case. I see that I'm almost out of time,
I have another question for you before you sit down.
Yeah, sure.
So if we decide, and I'm not saying we will, but if we were to decide that the Graves Amendment generally applies to car dealership loaner vehicles where there's no money consideration directly exchanged, is there any way that the amendment wouldn't apply here? Or would that decide the case?
The amendment,
let's say we decide against you and we say that in this type of situation where there's no direct consideration exchanged, that qualifies under the Graves Amendment. Does that mean you lose?
I think so. I think if the court says that the loaner vehicle, no consideration in this case, actually qualifies as a, quote, rental or a lease under the Graves Amendment, then I think we lose.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Savona?
Good morning. May it please the court. Teresa Savona on behalf of the Appellee, Randy Marion Chevrolet Buick Cadillac LLC. Thank you to the court for allowing us to appear remotely today. As my colleague, Mr. Lee, has argued, the Graves Amendment really, it turns on the language, the plain and ordinary language, plain text of the statute. And that's what this court needs to turn to when we talk about statutory interpretation. And we know, based on the brief, and this court is well aware, that this court can't add languages. And where the appellant's argument, I think, falls short is it turns on the words rents or leases. And while Judge Grant pointed to there are different dictionary definitions that are being used, when we look at Black's Law Dictionary for the purposes of rent, it talks about consideration paid, and that's a definition that the district court relied on in making its ruling. Consideration paid, that does not necessarily and only require the payment of money. And that seems to be what the appellant is arguing, that there must be a money exchange in order for the Graves Amendment to apply in this case. Now, there is consideration in this case. We have the testimony from Randy Marion's corporate representative, Mr. Goines, who testified that there is money made when someone brings their vehicle in for service and repairs at the dealership. There is no question that Ms. Lothorpe, in this case, brought her vehicle into the Randy Marion dealership for service and repair. There is no question that Ms. Lothorpe and Mr. Pope then used that vehicle while the other vehicle was being serviced by the dealership. So looking at just the plain language of the statute, the Graves Amendment does preclude the liability of this dealership in this case. And this, I think, also goes to Judge Anderson, something that you were asking about regarding overhead costs that are built in. And we have the testimony in this case that there are costs that are built in, that there is money that is made, and the consideration of the service and repair in exchange for the use of a Randy Marion vehicle. The appellant does not argue or challenge that the dealership, the Randy Marion dealership, is an owner under the Graves Amendment. So there's no question about whether the dealership is in the business or the trade of renting or leasing vehicles. And when looking at the statute as a whole, that's why the Graves Amendment should apply in this case. It wasn't written in a way just to apply to maybe a rental car company. It's specifically for an owner who is in the business or trade of renting or leasing vehicles. And again, there was testimony below by Mr. Goines, the corporate representative of Randy Marion, that is something that Randy Marion, the dealership, does, that it rents vehicles. And Mr. Goines' deposition was provided, I believe, in support of our summary judgment at DE 39-2, and I believe also as well in the appellant's response in opposition to same at DE 46-5.
Why doesn't rent entail some sort of specific payment for the item that the person uses?
It does require payment, and maybe that's where the difference is that payment doesn't necessarily mean money. I don't think that the position is that it doesn't require payment, but payment is some type of consideration. And I think that draws to a very interesting point, Your Honor, because as noted, I will say in the Romero decision that Mr. Lee has cited to, is that rent as a verb was not defined by Black's Law Dictionary at the time of the Graves Amendment, and that I believe states it as payment. Specifically, I should say the verb is to pay for the use of another's property. But again, pay does not in and of itself mean the exchange of money and only money. And pay, as defined in our answer brief, is to make due return to for services rendered or properly delivered, and to give in return for goods or services.
But wasn't the payment here made to fix the car rather than to borrow the loaner car?
The consideration was in exchange for the services and repairs by the dealership, that by doing that, the rental program at the dealership kicks in. And Mr. Goines testified that the rental program for the dealership is only available if someone provides their own vehicle for services and repairs. Those services and repairs were charged and there was money exchanged for those services and repairs. And Mr. Goines also testified that the services and repairs includes the amount of the loaner vehicle or the rental vehicle, whichever the term is to be used. So that's encompassed in that. And so even looking at it in that, in terms of the money aspect, there was money exchanged between the parties. So even under looking at it under that guise, I think that still falls under a rent or a lease for purposes of the Graves Amendment, and that it still constitutes some type of payment that would relieve any type of vicarious liability for for Randy Marion.
So here's a fun one. If, let's say that a school or university has a library and they allow students to reserve study rooms for free, are those students renting the study rooms, do you think?
I think a student who is paying tuition in exchange for the services that are being provided by the university or the college, that those services are in exchange for a monetary that may say tuition. Maybe tuition doesn't delineate that it is for the specific rental of a space in the library, a study room. But is there payment that's exchanged? Yes. And I think that for appellant's argument, if appellant is seeking that there must be payment specifically for the rental vehicle. And I don't, that's where I think that where we draw the distinction, we draw our differences, and why we're here today is that the payment was made and that payment can include other things other than just the exchange of money. And there was consideration. There does not have to be a fixed price for something. And even looking at the agreement, I know there was discussion by Judge Pryor about the use of the Romero decision. And in Romero, it was a loaner agreement, and it specifically discussed, even though there are some similar facts in this case and in Romero, I think one of the main differences is my understanding of Romero is that it was a loaner agreement and there was no discussion related to what the terms of it other than you are using a vehicle. And if we were to compare that into the agreement that was in this case and that was provided to the district court, it was a titled rental agreement. And subsection 2 of the rental agreement in this case specifically identifies the consideration that's being provided related to the services and repairs of the vehicle in exchange for the use of the Randy Marion vehicle.
But there's a dispute of fact about whether that agreement was signed, right? There's a dispute of fact. Go ahead.
I apologize. And I didn't want to get too far into the rental agreement. I did want to note that if that was something that the agreements were to be looked at, that was something. So I don't want to rely too heavily on that, but I did.
Let me ask you another question about the record. There's testimony, and I believe it was Mr. Goines who testified that the cost of the service was inflated. Maybe I don't mean to be negative with that term, but was increased due to the provision of the loaner agreement. Are you relying on that testimony? Or are you saying fact that she brought the car in to be serviced and received a loaner was the consideration?
I'm looking at, and this is at 68 lines 10 through 12. And again, that's at DE39-2 and DE46-5, where Mr. Goines said, when referring to the interchangeability of the words loaner and rental, he said, we're making some money when everyone gets a vehicle. And then additionally, if you go further down on page 68, he talks about you have to leave a vehicle and we have to work on it for you to get a rental. So looking at that, in addition to, he did, as Judge Pryor, as you pointed out, Mr. Goines did answer yes when he was asked if the dealership charges quote unquote a nice premium on the services that are rendered to someone who brings in their vehicle for servicing. So the testimony that is being relied on that Mr. Goines provided would be on page 68 of his deposition testimony, starting also on 67, where it talks about renting and leasing vehicles.
I'm not sure you answered my question, which is what significance are you placing on the idea that the dealership may have increased the cost of service to cover the loaner vehicles?
I apologize. It's the increase of it. It's that it's a built-in payment, meaning that that was the additional consideration in addition to the exchange of the repair and the service, that the price of the repair and the service also includes the payment of the use of a Randy Marion vehicle.
I thought he testified that if the cost of the service was $40, they charged $103. 103 sticks in my head. Am I right about that?
That is not sticking out in my head, but I will defer to you, Judge Pryor. But to the point that it is, if there is a payment, if it said the service is 40 and then they increase the amount, then that amount would include, as he testified, that it would include a monetary exchange. And I think that's where all of this comes back to, is to address appellant's point that there must be money exchanged.
But so Lothorpe and Pope testified that they weren't aware of any charge. They didn't agree to any charge like that. Does that mean there was a lack of mutual assent to the agreement?
Well, the issue of mutual assent, I believe, was raised for the first time in the reply brief. So I don't believe that was something that was considered by the district court. So to that extent, I'm not entirely prepared to discuss on that, and I'm happy to provide any type of supplemental briefing on that. But I believe the only time that I saw the argument of whether there was a meeting of the minds was in the reply brief. So if we, and again, I think that's where we go back to, we look at what the rent, the plain language of the statute means. And by looking at that, it's a consideration. The definition is consideration. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the exchange of money. And I think, just as Judge Anderson had indicated, that there is something in exchange for service. There's something that's being done.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to make sure I'm understanding. It sounds like, I think Judge Pryor's question was whether you're relying a lot on that, the price increase that was testified to. But since you weren't immediately familiar with it, I suppose the answer would be that you're not putting a lot of reliance on that. Is that correct?
That's correct. I think it's more to demonstrate what was relied on by the district court, and really what was to demonstrate the relationship between the parties. So thank you for that clarification. I apologize for not being clearer in my response to your question,
When you said that he first mentioned meeting of the minds in the reply brief, is that the reply brief on appeal?
Yes, Your Honor.
So he did not argue meeting of the minds in the district court?
Not that I recall, Your Honor. And
that testimony, by the way, was at DE 46, page 5, line 35.
Forty-6-5, Your Honor?
I think so, yes.
Okay. And I apologize, I cannot, of course, pull it up in front of me as soon as I need something.
I can't either.
but thank you for providing that, Judge Pryor. But in sum, I see that I'm quickly running out of my time. And Randy Marion would ask this court to affirm the district court's order granting summary judgment and finding that the Graves Amendment precludes liability for the dealership. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Lee, rebuttal.
Mr. Lee, I'm gonna interrupt first, but if I'm taking up time you need, then I'm sure we'll give you some extra. But I have a fun hypothetical for you. So if my family goes skiing, yes, and we put the kids in ski school, and you just pay one price for ski school, but they, as a part of that, they get skis to, obviously you need that for ski school, right? So you can rent skis separately, but if you pay for the ski school package, then you get skis. Have they rented those skis, or did they borrow them?
So if I'm understanding your hypothetical, so you pay for ski school, but the ski school never says that you're going to get skis as part of the ski school. Is that, am I correct?
Well, they say that you get that, but what you're really paying for is ski school. So in some contracts, you can specifically rent the skis, but they say if you pay for ski school, we'll let you use these skis. Is that a rental or a borrowing?
I think that if we're talking about a situation where it's actually in the agreement, so like you sign the agreement, you know you're getting into a rental agreement, and part of that is that they're going to provide skis, then that's I think what we would call a classic rental agreement.
But you're paying for, the agreement is for ski school. And when you get there, they're like, here's some skis.
Right. I mean, I think that that would be, I think it would be very similar to skis, which is basically just complimentary. They're just giving them to you. Okay. Because, and the reason I say that is because when I was thinking about my rebuttal, I went back to what Judge Anderson said about the common sense argument in this case. And when you have a rental or a lease agreement, both parties know it. You don't have a party thinking that they haven't done it. And what strikes me is what the court said earlier is that the undisputed evidence in this case is that the driver who actually got the vehicle didn't know that he got the vehicle as a rental or a lease, didn't even say that he was part of a rental or lease. He just said it that it was a complimentary vehicle that he got. And so when we're talking about ultimately, is this a rental? Is this a lease? Just from a factual standpoint, it wasn't. You can't have a rental or a lease, regardless of what definition you use, if the person doesn't know it. And so I think that more than anything highlights what the Romero decision did. Romero had the exact same situation. I'll just read this very quick for the court. And this is kind of summing up. Romero says a transaction involving the provision of a complimentary loan or vehicle is not a rental or lease transaction where no money or other considerations is identified by the parties at the time of the transaction, where the lessee was not made aware he was entering into a lease, and where there's no indicia of a lease agreement, oral or written. It defies logic to conclude that the driver in Romero was a party to a lease where he himself never agreed to a lease or the terms thereof. That is exactly what we have in this situation, and is part of the reason why we believe that the court should reverse the district court decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Our final case of the morning.